Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical on News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Zeke Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
Zeke, good morning. How are you doing?
Good morning. Doing good.
Awesome. Glad to have you in studio. We let Mr. David take a little break this morning. I think he's doing some family stuff.
Yep.
So good for that. Folks, we're ready for calls. Two more hours of home improvement. We're at 704-570-1110. That hasn't changed in 30 years. Maybe I'll get it right. 704-570-1110. Give us a call. We'll talk about what's important to you. We got Zeke in the studio this morning, so we'll focus on HVAC a bit more than usual. In fact, a lot more than usual. Zeke, I thought this morning, taking some time to talk about, you know, I think this is actually our second show into 2024, but always like to know what the EPA and manufacturers have cooked up for the new year. So maybe we could spend a minute on that. Talking about just the concepts of heat pump and not just the conventional, but maybe take a minute on, like, you know, you can get like geothermal, groundwater, just ground temperature or the air. There's different ways for heat pumps to work. And I thought maybe we could talk about that and what's practical. Because not every solution is a practical solution, particularly if you're living inside of city limits and you can't just be tearing up ground and stuff like that. Then, do you guys do heat pump water heaters?
No, we have not. Plumbing is one of the things that we're not in right now. We're probably going to get in it within a year or so, but we're not doing plumbing at this time.
Okay. I was just curious. I was poking around a little bit. I think we can talk about just the concept. Actually, it's way better than I thought, honestly. But I thought we'd take a second just on that concept for water, and then what is the energy or the industry's thoughts, opinions about natural gas? We hear all the hype about, you know, natural gas has to go away. I'd be interested in knowing what the industry really is thinking about that. Are they doing anything different?
No. I mean, it doesn't make sense, but, you know, natural gas is still less expensive to operate than electric for the heat pumps, and it's a good, very good option, especially with the new 96-98% efficiency units. But they've got this thing about getting rid of natural gas and getting rid of gasoline fuel, you know.
Yeah.
Trying to move everything to electric, and our electric grid cannot handle it.
I don't understand. I guess, and I'm not trying to be difficult. I'm a believer. We've been given this earth, and we need to be good stewards of it, but. We hear over and over and over again, change your light bulbs, put this energy efficient unit in, rolling brownouts because the grid can't handle it. But then every time I turn around, it's like your car needs to be electric. Your everything needs to be electric. Yeah. I don't know. If I was a suspicious character, let's just leave it at that. I don't talk about that. If we could take a minute, Zeke, when we come back from our break, and just talk about planning around replacement of your heating and cooling system. Like, how old? When do you start looking at it? If you have a regular maintenance contract, what are the things that might show up during an inspection that would make you think, could be time to think about maybe budgeting for a replacement or something on that order. And then last thing I have here, we'll go to our break here in a second, but the last thing I have is I'd love to spend some time on whole house generators. I think you guys do that, right?
We do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'd like to spend just a minute on some of the benefits of that and consider what that would look like. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Zeke Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
Zeke, thanks for being with us this morning. I appreciate it. Always grateful for your good guidance. We've got a lot on the docket, so to speak, this morning. But we talked briefly about natural gas. And there seems to be some kind of desire to like lose that or get rid of that. But just let's take a second. I recall many, many, many times talking about the most efficient solution for someone in our climate being a dual fuel solution for heating and cooling. Is that right?
Yes, and it's excuse me, and it still is. I mean, you know, the dual fuel heat pump is the way to go. I mean, you use the gas furnace and in the extreme cold weather, but the heat pump on the electric side can usually heat the house is getting built tighter and tighter, so they don't need as much heat. But the heat pump can generate enough heat to keep the house comfortable down to, you know, 30 degrees or below. And that's when they start having to need some supplemental heat. And natural gas is the way to go there instead of having to use electric backup.
That's
When you have a 96% efficiency gas furnace, the economical balance point is just, you know, in that area, the 25 to 32 degrees. And as you know, in this area, I mean, yes, we get cold weather at night, but during the day, most of the days you get above, you know, above 35, 40 degrees, which means that the heat pump can take care of it.
It just seems to make just common sense that, you know, you would use the most efficient solution. And when you had to step up, you know, amp it up, so to speak. I know that's an electrical term, but instead of amping it up and paying a lot of money, you gas it up, I guess. I give it a little gas. What about folks who have LP? They don't have natural gas lines, but they would use propane. Still, propane's still better?
Propane is fairly expensive, but still, you have to run the load on each house to see where your economical balance point is. In a LP furnace, it might be, you know, a little bit colder before you start using the heat pump or bring in the heat pump quicker back from the LP gas.
So that makes me want to ask two questions, and one will sound a little bit self-serving, not for me, but for a partners that we've chosen like you guys. But so let me ask the first question. So you said you might choose to kick the gas in a little bit when it's a little bit colder, if LP is the dual fuel or the second fuel. Can you adjust a heat pump to tell it, kick it in here, kick it in there?
You can. Years ago, it used to be done with even with electric backup heat. Duke Energy, when they were all electric, especially all electric homes where they had the heat pump with the electric backup, they wanted you to control the electric backup in 5 kW increments. So in other words, you'd set up outdoor thermostats, and when it got to, let's say, 40 degrees, you brought in 5 kW, and it got down to 32, you brought another 5, and you could bring on, you know, bring it in 5 kW increments until mm-hmm. you used all the electric heat you had for backup. So instead of using that type of setup, you get the same, works at the same way. You have an outdoor thermostat, but, you know, it's just a thermistor, and you switch it over. So you can set the thermostat, you can control it, so it will not let the gas come until it's at a certain temperature outdoors.
Got it. Well, that sounds pretty smart. I mean, the second question, I guess, that I wanted to ask or comment that I felt like I wanted to make is just, if those are the kinds of things you have to do to max out the efficiency of a system, if you buy a good dual fuel system or a high efficiency system, you really want to make sure that the person installing it is making all those adjustments correctly, because I'm guessing that all has to be done at point of at time of installation.
Correct. It can be done. Excuse me. It just needs to be set up at the time of startup. And the thing about that is, as the electric rates go up or the gas goes up, you can control it and then readjust it. If you can keep, you know, let your service tech know to double check the balance point and see what the thermostat is set for.
So, does this require like the super high tech thermostats inside, or is this something that just an average thermostat will accommodate? And then
it has to be a digital thermostat. Yeah. But most of the thermostats now are digital. They're just little bit a small computer sitting on your wall, so you can do all kinds of stuff with them.
Yeah, I walked some houses this week in Arizona. And it looked like a little iPad on the wall with all the different stuff. It's pretty crazy. All right, so I guess I wanted to just kind of revisit the whole concept of the dual fuel thing, and encourage folks to think about, you know, having some element of a heat pump in their solution, even if gas is available at the house, because I think it just feels like that's sort of the best of both worlds. You're consuming less natural gas because you don't need it during those warmer times of the day or warmer times of the year. But then it feels like it's the most environmentally sound solution also. With, what do you say, the high efficiency furnaces are like 96, 98% or something like that?
They're up to 98%. And the other thing that with the new energy code and rebates and the one thing, let's say if you have just a gas furnace and an air conditioner, if you're having to replace it or just replace the air conditioner, you can replace the air conditioner with a heat pump and get that. And if you're replacing the whole system, there's actually a $2,000 energy tax credit that you can get now if you go from, gas furnace and air conditioner to a dual fuel heat pump. Huh. You get a $2,000 credit, tax credit.
That's good. I felt like tax credits and all that stuff had gone away for a little while, but it sounds like they're back.
Yeah, they're coming back.
That'd be awesome. No, that's good. I mean, that's the right way to think about it. So good stuff. Folks, we're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. I kind of got deep into it there and forgot to give our numbers out. So give us a call. We're happy to talk about what's important to you. The Zeke, I did want to take a second, maybe just to touch in. Well, let's see. Mike is here with a question. Let's see if we can get Mike first. Mike, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
Hey, doing great. Great. Enjoying your show.
Thanks.
Yeah, you touched a little bit there on thermostats and uh-huh. smart thermostats. I haven't really started researching them, but I know I would like to have a better one than I have now, mm-hmm. which is just to walk over and push the thermostat temperature up or down.
Right.
I have a heat pump, and I'm wondering two things. Is upgrading my thermostat to a smarter thermostat a do-it-yourself kind of thing, and also is there such a thing as my system being too dumb for a smart thermostat?
Great question.
It depends on how how old your system is, as far as, you know, the system being too old for a smart thermostat. But the as far as do it yourself, it does take some. You have to do a lot of reading on the installation instructions and follow the steps of, you know, you have to know what kind of system you have, whether there are some systems that reversing valve is energized in cooling.
Hey, Zeke, and Mike, we're going to be right up against the break here, so let's do this. I'm going to put you on hold, Mike. If you can hang out through the break, we'll get you right after that. If not, Zeke and I will make sure we touch on the topic. Don't go away. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave, and we're going to be back after these messages.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
St. Jude treats children across the country and around the world, regardless of color, creed, or financial capability, because they're committed to love and care for their neighbors. Join me in helping St. Jude give every child with cancer the chance they deserve to survive. Together, we can save more lives. Call now to become a partner in hope. 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Zeke Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
And we're going to jump right back on the phone here with Mike. Mike, thanks so much for waiting through the break. You had a couple questions. One was, you want to change out your thermostat to a smart or smarter thermostat. And was that a do-it-yourself job? And then second is there such a thing as a thermostat that's smarter than your system so that your system you wouldn't be able to get the full advantages of it. And Zeke, maybe we just kind of refresh the conversation altogether.
Yeah, sure. the thermostat, yes, it can be a do-it-yourself. The only thing that I would say is that the thermostats that you get from some of the big box stores and you see online, and thermostats you get from a contractor are not the same thing. Honeywell, for one, the thermostat that they sell at the stores is only has a one-year warranty, while once you get through a contractor, it's a little bit heavier duty, and it does have a five-year warranty on the parts, which is really the thermostat, because you can't really replace anything in it. Being a computer, little computer, you just have to change the whole thing. The biggest thing is, you know, having to go through and do the step-by-step, all of the installation instructions, they're pretty detailed. And you just, if you can follow the steps, you can program it yourself. It's just, it depends on how, you know, how comfortable you are doing that.
Yeah, I think, I mean, if I could just weigh in, Mike, David and I get asked this question a lot, and Zeke is being, I think he's being as broad as possible in answering it. I think my gut feeling on it is I probably wouldn't do it, and I wouldn't do it as a do-it-yourself project for two reasons. Number one, selection of the right thermostat. If you're going into like a Home Depot or another big box, you know, how are you picking the right one for your unit? And then number two is, Zeke, correct me if I'm wrong, but I think even if you're not used to dealing with the wiring in these things, just crossing over, if you have the power on, if you haven't done the right thing, just crossing over wires or even touching screwdrivers and arcing a little bit can damage fairly sensitive items either in the thermostat or in the unit itself. So that's kind of the reason that we've guided folks away from doing that in the past. And Zeke, I don't know, maybe I'm just being like nervous Nelly.
No, I agree with you. It's just that, you know, is it a do-it-yourself? Yes, it can be. It's just you got to be very careful, and you have to, you know a little bit. You know, like picking the right thermostat, there's a lot of systems out there on the market. That's why I said, you know, how old is your system? I mean, some of the new units are multiple stage. It's got like a two-stage outdoor unit, and then you have a furnace that has a two-stage furnace. And so you have to pick the right thermostat, because not all thermostats can handle two stages of cooling and two stages of heating. And if it's a heat pump, it becomes three stages of heating, or four, actually. So you have to know which thermostat to buy.
It sounds like to me, from what you're answering, that I would be better off to just... First, I need to educate myself on what smart thermostats can do that my current thermostat doesn't do, and then go to my HVAC guy that I've had a relationship with for like 5 years.
There you go.
I'm up here in Lincolnton, by the way, and ask them about upgrading, and I'm sure they'd be glad to help me with that. But anyway, it's just a question that popped in my head as you were touching on thermostats.
No, I think you ask good questions, and thanks for the call, because a lot of people out there are thinking and wondering the same thing. And if you, and also kudos to you for having that relationship with, you know, with somebody that you can trust for the HVAC scenario, right? Because that's half the battle. But I hope we were helpful.
Yep, you were very much.
All right,
thank you, Mike. I enjoy your show. See you.
Thank you. Thanks for the call. Thanks for waiting through the break. All right, Mike goes off to work on some all things thermostat related. we're at 704-570-1110. 704-570-1110 is the number you can catch up with Zeke and me. Zeke, we talked about just kind of the basic principles of heat pumps. Maybe before we go, we've got a couple minutes before a break, but just a real quick summary. If you geothermal is a solution, what is geothermal, real quick?
Geothermal is just using the ground or the groundwater, and you take the heat out of it, and in the summertime, put the heat back into the ground. And geothermal, some people sort of, there's such a thing as a water-to-air, and you can have different water-to-air. You can have one, you take the water from the well, you use it to heat or cool the house, and then you have to have another well to dump it back in, because you can't use it and then put it back in the same well.
Right.
So you either have to have another well or have a lake or a creek that you can put it back into. And then you have still the water to air, but instead of using clean water all the time, it's sort of a ground loop, and you put the pipes in the ground or in the lake, and you circulate that same water, so you don't use water all the time. You just recirculate the water and do it that way.
Okay. We're going to be up against a break, so we'll go ahead and take it. But I want to talk just a little bit about that, because I love the idea, but I think depending on your scenario, it may or may not be either a viable option or even an economically feasible or practical option. So we'll talk about that a little bit when we come back from our break. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're going to take a little break. We'll be back at 704-570-1110 to answer your home improvement questions.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
When St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was considered incurable. Since then, St. Jude has helped push the overall survival rate from 20% to more than 80%. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer. Join me today in supporting St. Jude by calling 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 to become a partner in hope. Your gift to St. Jude could last a lifetime.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Zeke Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
And I want to slide our Home Depot product of the week in here. We wanted to get back to Mike real quick last time. But the product of the week this week, I love it. Super simple, super great. It's the Husky 1200 Lumen Dual Power 6-Beam Rechargeable Flashlight. It's like, okay, that's pretty simple. Yep, that's the idea. It's actually at the price point, you probably have a couple of them in at different places in the house. What I love about it, it's adjustable beams. It shoots 200-meter beam. It's LED, so it sips energy. 60 hours of run time, and it can run on regular, like, AA batteries, or it has a rechargeable battery built in, and it comes with the USB. USB charging cable. So you stick it by the bedside, keep it charged up, and you've got 60 hours of LED brightness, 1,200 lumens. The price point, less than $35. So you will be glad you spent the money the next time the power goes out. And then, Zeke, that could be a segue to our whole house generators.
We're going to wait
a minute on that for one second. I do want to talk, because we were talking a little bit about the whole geothermal thing. It's like, I love the idea. So if you're like on a lake or if you, I mean, what are the ideal or optimal places? Because people listen to that and they get all excited and then it may not be an option for them, right? What are the optimal places where you can do geothermal?
Well, in just about the Charlotte area, if you're doing a new construction, new house, you can put the ground loop in the ground and then you're all right. The problem is on an existing home, to try to put a geothermal in with the ground loop, you're going to tear up the backyard. If you're going to even drill a well for the, you know, you're having to drill two wells again. That's a lot of so the cost of installation might be, you know, it's the rate of return is not there. So,
right.
That's the issue. On a new construction, it's a closer payback.
And then, you know, I think that's it. And I think that's it's the same old thing. It's right, cost of acquisition versus cost of ownership. And I know we tickled the topic of the heat pump water heaters. And I've always been really skeptical of those things. And so I went back and did some, you know, checking around, because they're not cheap, right? But go ahead.
They're not. And, you know, they're getting better and bigger and more efficient, because now they even have them for your pool. You can have a pool heater that's really a heat pump. It's just using the heat pump to heat the water in your pool. But again, cost of operation is, you know, the thing. Natural gas would be cheaper to heat the water than electrical.
And I did some math, you know, which should impress everybody. But if the 40-gallon hybrid or energy, you know, a heat pump version was a 16, I saw one for $1,644. And then a comparable electric, not gas, just electric, because it's to compare it fairly, I thought, $579. So there's a delta of $1,065 between the two units at cost of acquisition. But here's what I thought. Here's what has improved radically from my recollection. If you're saving an average of about $315 a year, your payback on that is 3.5 years. So you get a 10-year warranty on that. I mean, you've got whatever that math is. That's math I didn't do. 6+ years of payback that actually is actual payback.
Right.
So I think that's way better than it was when they first came out.
It is. And it's just the other thing is, though, if you have your water heater now inside the house and you use the heat pump water heater, that's putting heat back into the air inside the house. So now you're going to have to cool that again. So you're paying to extra to cool that that water that or the heat that came, you know, to generate the water.
It sounds a little bit like the IRS. We're going to tax what's already been taxed.
Yeah.
Wait, did I say that out loud? That's somebody else's show. We don't want to talk about that here. I didn't think about that.
It does take some humidity out of the house, which is, you know, also good, because you're taking heat out of the air. You have to do the refrigeration cycle, so you are cooling the room.
And I guess depending on the time of year, some portions of the year it's you know, problematic or dilutive of the efficiency, and sometimes it's accretive to the efficiency. So I get it. It's, you got to do it. But again, it just begs the question of having a really good partner to kind of help do the calculations and say, hey, this makes sense or this doesn't. And I feel this, John's opinion only, just like things that David and I talk about, hey, well, what's the return on investment if I do this in my home? And we say, well, there's this return on your investment when you go to sell it. But remember, part of the return on the investment is enjoying, you know, some aspect of your home. I would argue that some element of return on investment is knowing that we have done our part to be a little bit more energy efficient in how we approach, you know, heating, cooling our homes and water and so on and so forth. So I think just something to consider. It's, like I said, that's opinion only, and everybody knows about opinions. All right, so that's good information. What I don't know, we talked about it at the beginning. We've got a couple minutes here. Is there anything new coming down the line for from the EPA or I don't know, manufacturers with respect to what's coming out in 2024?
They've sort of changed the, you know, originally we were supposed to already have the new refrigerant this year. They pushed it back and till next year. There's rumbling that it's even going to get pushed again. So we don't know what EPA is going to do. Manufacturers are lobbying against some of it. And they did change. One of the rules that they did change was that once the date gets, they said that if you had units that were manufactured before that date, you couldn't sell them. Now they're saying you got like a 3-year to sell it, so you're not going to get stuck with just, you know, equipment that is going to, you know, the old equipment they have in their warehouses, they couldn't sell it. Now the manufacturer have gotten them to relax on that part of it, so it's not, you're not going to get stuck with a bunch of inventory that's not that you cannot sell.
Fundamentally illegal,
right?
Yeah. Well, I think that's good. A lot of people get suspicious when a manufacturer lobbies one way or the other, and they're like, well, it's very self-serving. And it can be. It can be, you know, we've seen things that are just downright wrong. But in that scenario, it's just kind of common sense. Hey, we can't stop manufacturing things while you make up your mind. And then once you make up your mind, like, kind of hard to unmanufacture those.
Right.
So that's good. So no, nothing radical. We can get on and just make good, prudent decisions for what's right in our house as we go down the line. What about, and we may end up taking up a little bit more of this in the second hour, Zeke. But so that almost asks the question of what do we do when so our units are, I don't know, 10, 15 years old. At what age do you start paying closer attention to how much you're spending on maintenance and what's new in the marketplace as far as efficiency and start thinking about budgeting for a new one, even if your system hasn't failed?
Right. The life expectancy of the systems, they're saying 12 to 15 years for an air conditioner, and about the same thing for the furnace. Now, some people say, oh, my furnace is 20 years old and I've had no problem with it. True. The furnaces were built with heavier metal, and as they get the efficiency up, they'd have to thin that metal of the heat exchanger out so they can get better, you know, quicker heat transferred and get the efficiency. Well, if you got thinner metal, it's not going to last as longer. So the units are not going to last as long as they used to. So you're still looking at between 10 and 15. Once you get into that 12-year range, you need to start making some, budget decisions, start putting some money aside to replace it.
Yeah. And then when you do replacement, is it best to replace heat where it's not a heat pump? Is it best to replace both heat, a furnace and air conditioner at the same time?
Well, in some cases, yes, it is better to do both. And in some cases, if you're wanting to go to a higher efficiency unit, you just about have to, because the new, let's say, variable speed outdoor unit has to have a variable speed indoor unit. You can't just change one without the other.
Right.
If you don't, then you're not going to get the benefits of the new piece of equipment you just put on the outdoor unit. Now you can change the furnace and put a variable speed furnace without changing the air conditioner, and then change the air conditioner to a high efficiency, later on. But if you're changing the outdoor unit, you just about have to change the furnace.
Got it. Okay, that makes sense. I remember helping some folks up here north. There's a community up north of us here in Atlanta, and we were trying to make the decision, and we couldn't make the decision to go to a more energy efficient system without changing both of them out. So
right.
I appreciate that guidance. Yeah. All right, we're going to be right up against a break here, so we're going to go ahead and take it. Folks, this is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. We're at 704-570-1110. We've got Zeke Acosta in the house, our resident HVAC expert, so take advantage of that intelligence and give us a shout. We'll be back to answer more home improvement questions on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show, brought to you in part by DryPro.
The Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Answering your home improvement questions every Saturday on WPT. Presented by Charlotte Comfort Systems Heating and Air Conditioning and Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. On News Talk 1110 and 99.3 WPT.
Welcome back, everybody. It's hour number two of the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Zeke Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
Thanks for being with us, Zeke. Folks, we're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. Give us a call. Talk about what questions you might have. Otherwise, Zeke and I will just keep yammering for another hour. And it goes fast. So join. Give us a call. Zeke, we were talking about... the time to when it makes sense to think about replacing your system, kind of whether you should do one part, another part, and altogether. Let's take a second and operate on the premise that a heat pump is probably the most efficient, a heat pump is a really good option to consider, especially given all of the advancements in the last 20 plus years with respect to how they function, their efficiency, comfort level, and so on. And then probably a dual fuel, where a secondary fuel like natural gas or even LP propane is available, is the most effective way to go. But I'd like to talk about just maybe some of the things that our heat pump, like errors, the mistakes people make that cost them inefficiency in heat pumps. Before we do that, Ralph has a question, so let's jump over to Ralph. Ralph, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Hey, good morning. Thanks for taking my call. I appreciate your show. It helps, guys like me who step around the house quite a bit. My question today, sir, is about water heaters. We're about ready to replace one, and my specific thought is, can you PEX that in, shark bite and PEX that instead of having to solder from the tank up to the main lines? I understand about plumbing at the rudimentary level. I would say I'm a little bit better than a beginner, not really a solid intermediate. Thank you.
Thanks, Ralph. I think there are devices for PEX to go from the unit itself into the main lines of the house, and you can use a PEX device. What I'm unsure of is the shark bite solution, whether you need to crimp it at the water heater or whether a shark bite solution is acceptable. Zeke, do you know?
A shark bite would work in most cases. Now, the other thing is, water heater, yes, you can change it, supposed to get a permit have it inspected by the county, because they're also going to require an expansion tank if you don't have one.
And that expansion tank is what, please? I have a water heater. That's all I know.
Okay. Sorry.
Expansion tank is just that, to give room for the as the water heats up, it expands. So the expansion tank that goes, in that in the line to have.
Oh, I understand. Okay.
For that, it also. I'm not sure. I'm not a plumber. Just what I heard from plumbers. That it also helps with the hammering of your
it
water
does.
Lines.
So Ralph, if you look, if you go down or out wherever your water heater is and look, you should see coming probably off the top somewhere it's probably about, I don't know, 9 to 10 inches in diameter, and it looks like a mini tank or cylinder. By itself.
I don't have one of those on our line.
All right, so
our house was on well water, and then eventually they took the house off well water and just ran the line from the street, took out all the filters, and ran it straight to the water heater. So that's how it's set up right now.
All right, so you'll need to have an expansion tank put in, and the expansion tank helps, as Zeke says, as the water heats up, it expands, and there's a temperature and pressure relief valve on the side of the tank, and if the temperature gets to, you know, beyond a safe point, then it'll release the spring and it'll let water out. What we see is sometimes water will come out that TMP valve, and if you have an expansion tank, that doesn't happen, right? The tank takes it up. And over a period, you don't have to worry about it because you don't have one. They'll put one in. Over a period of time, they can become waterlogged and they have to be replaced. Usually a best practice is to replace them at the same time you replace your water heater. If you have one, it's usually not that much more expensive. But I think those are the things that you want to be looking at.
Yeah. It sounds like he needs some help with this instead of just going and buying a water tank and throwing it in there myself. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot for the conversation, and I learned something. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, Ralph. I would argue that I'm like the consummate do-it-yourselfer. I really do a lot of things myself, and that's just one thing I won't do. I mean, I don't know. Maybe I'm a chicken, but anyway. And to your point, Zeke, I think it's got to be inspected.
Right.
Yeah, with a permit pulled and stuff like that. So, all right, 704-570-1110. That's our number. Give us a call. We want to talk about what's important to you. Zeke, we were starting to talk about just some of the mistakes that people can make that cost them in energy efficiency and heat pumps. And we're probably about 50 seconds away from another break. So I'm going to tee up what I think are the topics, and then we'll comment or ask you to comment on them when we come back from our break. But number one is just looking at the thermostat temperature and then trying to make decisions about, do I turn the heat up? Do I turn it down? Looking at a number versus determining what's comfortable and not comfortable. The second thing I would say is just coming home and you want it to be warmer, and so you move it up 5 degrees and you kick in the auxiliary heat to get things warmed up quickly. The other thing, I'll use a technical term. The third thing I say is risky, is fiddling with the darn thing. Like, okay, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do that. And then switching to auto mode. So those are things we'll talk about when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
When St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was considered incurable. Since then, St. Jude has helped push the overall survival rate from 20% to more than 80%. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer. Join me today in supporting St. Jude by calling 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 to become a partner in hope. Your gift to St. Jude could last a lifetime.
Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Zeke Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
Zeke, always grateful to have you in studio, sir. Much appreciate all the good guidance that you share with us. Before we talk to our next caller, Tom, let's do the Home Depot product of the week. I'm loving this one. It's a Husky 1200 lumen dual power LED rechargeable focusing flashlight. That's a lot of words. 1200 lumens, very bright. 6 different beam modes, so it can be wide, it can be narrow. 200 meters in distance for the beam, 60 hours of runtime, and it can run on regular AA batteries, or it has a rechargeable battery built into it, and it comes with a USB charging cable. So you can plug it in next to the nightstand like you do your cell phone or what have you, and it's ready to go for 60 hours. The price point on this thing, less than $35. So that's it. That's our Home Depot product of the week, the Husky 1200 Lumen Dual Power Rechargeable Flashlight. Now let's talk to Tom. Tom, good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you this morning?
I'm good. Morning. Thanks for all the good info. I had a question on thermostats. I heard you were talking about stage one and stage two on the thermostat, and I was just wondering what that's talking about.
Zeke?
Well, different stages, depending on the type of air conditioner or heating system that you have. The standard air conditioner is just either on or off. It's either running or it's not. And the newer ones have, two stages. In other words, it runs like on half speed. If it's mild weather and if it gets hot, it goes on to the second stage or second speed. The same thing on the furnaces. You can have a furnace that can have two different stages, low heat and high heat. So that's what we're talking about, stages, on your thermostats.
Does that help?
Oh, okay. So, yes, that helps. I know on my furnace I have a two-speed fan. Does that change the thermostat, the type of thermostat that it uses?
If you have two speed on the fan, more than likely you have two stage gas valve. To get the full benefit of it. Now, going back, I would say probably 80 or 90% of the furnaces have multiple speed fans in them. They got low, medium, and high speed on the fan. But they don't get used unless you need to dehumidify or, additional airflow for the heat. So it just depends on what system you have. I don't know what kind of heating system you have.
Yeah, I have an electric train, and I notice it comes on running slow. And then it bumps up into another speed, so it's got like two speeds, what they told me when they put it in.
On the blower.
On the blower. Well,
on the blower part.
You said that was a train?
Yes, sir.
Train has it where when the fan first starts, it starts at low speed and it actually ramps up to the high speed. And that's just part of the equipment itself. It's not as different stages on the thermostat.
Right, right.
So I think just two things, Tom. One is, if you're thinking about changing out the thermostat, it may be worthwhile. We talked about it a little bit earlier in the show. It may be worthwhile to have your HVAC guy come out and take a look at that and do it if that's what you're going to do, because they will also make the determination, is it a blower speed difference that may or may that doesn't need to be monitored by a thermostat, or is it a system, stages, as Zeke spoke about, and then that does have an impact on what kind of thermostat changes you make out.
Okay, sounds good.
All right. Thanks for the call, Tom.
Yeah, I appreciate y'all.
I feel like HVAC is like cars. There was a point in time where you could lift the hood on a car and kind of know what was going on.
Yeah, there's
those days are gone.
They are. Everything's computerized and just digital, and it does make it hard. It's gradually it's gotten rid of some of the older technicians that weren't comfortable working on, the digital stuff, and some of them have retired probably earlier than they needed
than
to
they
just because
to.
They're not feeling comfortable.
No, I totally get it. And, of course, that's problematic for the rest of us who need to have, you know, good guys out there doing this stuff, because clearly it's not, you know, it's not a do-it-yourself deal. Yeah. You got to have good guidance. Let's go back for a second and talk about I before we went to break, I was talking about what I thought were four things that, as I've listened to your guidance over the years and just read up on stuff, things that could cause an energy efficient heat pump unit in particular to be less than, you know, to run at less than its designed efficiency for human interference reasons. And one of them was looking at the temperature on the thermostat and just adjusting it up or down based on that temperature. My sense is it should go with, look, set it where you're going to be comfortable and then leave it alone.
In most cases, that's it. You know, just set it where it's comfortable. Don't worry about whether it's 72 or 74 or 68. If you're comfortable, even some thermostats have a comfort instead of they do have still in the numbers, but they'll have a range, and it said comfort range, trying to get you to think about that. But
right.
The best thing is, you know, set what you want the house to be for the winter, and what you want it for heating, and what you want it for cooling. And if you have a auto switch over thermostat, just put it on auto and let it go.
Okay.
I
want to talk about auto in a second, but Wayne has a question on a heat pump, so we'll go to Wayne real quick. Wayne, sure. Good morning. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Good morning, gentlemen. How are you?
Doing well.
Zeke? Great. Listen, I've got a townhome I bought 2 years ago, and the heating system and air conditioning system was replaced before I bought the place. So it's less than 2 years old, really. Okay.
Okay.
It's a heat pump system, but it's got no name. There's no label on the system. It was serviced by your company, Zeke, and they said it was probably might be a Carrier. They didn't know, but it's just like a generic unit. Mm. Anyway, it's worked fine, but when it gets really cold, and I'm assuming that the auxiliary heat's coming on, at the end of the cycle, the air comes out like gangbusters. It's like all of a sudden the fan goes into hyperdrive, and it just blows a lot, and then it shuts off. And again, that's usually only in the wintertime when temperature is getting like, you know, 30 or below. Is that normal?
Nah, I don't know, other than maybe it just went into the higher heat setting, and at that time they needed more airflow, and it's enough heat coming out, you know, it's putting heat into the house at a higher rate, and it cuts off. But I'm not sure that's, you know, the normal thing.
It's strange. I mean, I at night, let's say if I wake up in the middle of the night or I'm not asleep yet, I hear it. And it's what's going on?
Yeah.
I said, it's just before the system shuts off.
Yeah.
Mine does that. I have a natural gas one, Wayne, and mine does the same thing. And here's what I presumed, and Zeke, it could just be insanity. I just figured that system is hot, and before everything can shut down and before you can stop moving air across that heat exchange unit, from a safety perspective, it did one last burst to drop the temperature to a point and then shuts it down. But is that possible in a heat pump, especially if auxiliary is kicked in? Or is that just lunacy on my part? Which would be?
I mean, it could be. It's not something that I have seen do. But again, he's saying, you said not knowing what the brand of the unit is, and I'm not sure if you had the model number, we can probably pull it up and find out from the model number what brand it is and what, you know, what the features are on it. But
all right. Well, knows anything about HVAC, Zeke, it's you. So it's pretty amazing that, I mean, it's kind of strange. It sounds like a strange situation, but it does make sense that maybe it only happens when the it's really cold, so I'm sure the coils come on.
Yeah.
And maybe they do need to be cooled off before it shuts off. But I'll ask your guys next time I come for my normal maintenance.
Sure. Yeah. That's And if you want to, you just give us a call. And we might have the model and serial number on, of the unit already in the computer, and probably pull it up and see what you know what you actually have.
Okay. Well, I really appreciate that.
Yeah. I was going to say, Zeke, the tech probably captured the model number, but may not be able to cipher from that the manufacturer. Whereas you could push that into the system and tell, right?
Right. Yes.
Okay. All right. Hey, Wayne. Thank you so much for the call. Appreciate it.
You're welcome. Have a good day.
Thank you.
Wayne goes off. We're operating on the premise that since nothing is functioning weirdly, he's going to be okay. We'll stay with that. We're at 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. That's the number if you'd like to join the call. We're going to take our last break and be back to answer more home improvement questions when we return to the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. Welcome back. It's the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Zeke Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
And we've got Bob. Good morning, Bob. You're on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show. How are you?
Hi. Doing okay, folks.
Great. How can we help, Bob?
Well, I've got a nearly 40-year-old house with a couple of exterior receptacles. And they are what they were in 1985. I wondered whether today's code or if we're interested in getting a house ready for what would require those to be upgraded to what I see on a house today.
Well, they should be ground fault breakers being outdoors, and that would be something that, you know, you should have just for safety. It keeps from possibly getting shocked, especially since if water can get in them, being on the outside. And if you had a drill or an extension light or something plugged into it, it could, you know, not be protected.
So Zeke is right about the GFI. The challenge will be for you to figure out, is a GFI protected? You can tell a GFI circuit because it looks different. It's got the test buttons and the reset button and stuff on it. But it's possible.
These are just regular old three-prong plug receptacles.
So do you have a ground fault somewhere in the garage or somewhere else outside?
Not that I'm aware of.
Okay. Yeah.
Even the main breaker box might have a ground fault breaker that is feeding, so it could be protected at the breaker box.
So I think a couple things for you to do to find out, Bob, is walk through the garage, check out all your outside receptacles, and see if there's a GFI. If you find a GFI anywhere, hit the test button, and then go check the other outside receptacles. They should be dead, right? And then you can reset, and you're good. The other place, to Zeke's point, is in your breaker box, you'll see a breaker that has a little white reset, a test reset on it, and that would be a GFI breaker, and it would protect any receptacles on the same circuit as that breaker. So you could turn that breaker off and see if your outside breakers are shut down. If the answer to both of those questions is no, then you are 100% correct, and it's time to get a GFI. Now, the advantage you can have is, Zeke, you should maybe talk to, like, if he puts one GFI in, it can protect everything down line from that, right?
Right. You can have it, you know, the first one can be the GFI protection, or just like having just changing the breaker. If you know, if they're all fed by the same wire, you can put a GFI breaker in and do that. All you need is one. You don't need a separate protection at each one.
So if you're handy, Bob, you can figure out what breaker controls it, which will answer your question about whether it's a GFI breaker also. Turn the breaker off, pull a receptacle out, and pull the wires off of it. If there's like one wire in, and if it's just a ground, a neutral, a black and a white, then that receptacle isn't feeding any other receptacle and probably needs to be a GFI. But if there's three wires, so one in, a black, a white, and then another black out, that power is going to another somewhere else in the circuit, right? So if you put a GFI there, you're protecting what's downline from it. But if you're not like super kind of wired, no pun intended, to think through all those things, might be worthwhile having just an electrician come out or even a home inspector come out who'd be able to tell you those kinds of things.
Okay, and it sounds like that's having those exterior receptacles on a GFI circuit is really that's really smart, maybe required the way it's
it will show up on an inspection. If you're going to sell your home and an inspector comes out and looks at that, he or she is going to say, hey, there's outside receptacles that are not GFI protected, and that that will need to be corrected before you sell the house.
Yeah. Okay. Then I'm off and running. Thanks a lot, guys.
All right. Thanks for the call, Bob. It's actually easier, I think, than we might have made that sound, Zeke. I don't know. I mean, you can tell, but if he's not sure, I think just get an electrician out there. It's not going to be super, super expensive to just figure out what's going on.
You can have an electrical inspection done. We do it ourselves. Currently like $59 to come out and look at stuff like that.
Perfect. I mean, that's the right idea. And then I was actually giving some thought to my own breaker box, and just everything is labeled, but I'm like, man, I know all these things, but if I was going to sell this house, I would want to be a little bit clearer on like what was what, right? So just taking a minute even and being a little bit more descriptive in what goes on. I have a little sheet on the door of my breaker box that has more descriptions on it, and it would have been help Bob, to say, hey, this GFI or these are the outside receptacles. If it's listed on his breaker box and it says outside receptacles, he can go back and say, well, that's, circuit number 6, and no, it's not a GFI, so he either needs one in line or he's got to do something to fix it, right?
Right. Yeah, that's the thing. Years ago, you could just write on the panel and the inspector would let it go. Now you have to label it and either put with the label maker, put the mark it, or at least type it and put the cover, put it in the cover. I know my house is, rather 40 years old, and when that was done, the electrician that did it back then just wrote it in pencil on that breaker panel.
Well,
half of that stuff, I know where they go, but half of them are, you can't read what they, where they're supposed to go because it's just worn off.
Yeah. All right, let's take a break. We'll be back to answer more home improvement questions at 704-570-1110 when we return from these messages.
Whether it's audiobooks or all-time greatest hits, long live listening to your favorites. Learn more about Kisqali Ribociclib 200 milligrams at KISQALI.com and talk to your doctor to see if Kisqali is right for you.
When St. Jude opened in 1962, childhood cancer was considered incurable. Since then, St. Jude has helped push the overall survival rate from 20% to more than 80%. St. Jude won't stop until no child dies from cancer. Join me today in supporting St. Jude by calling 1-800-411-9898. That's 1-800-411-9898 to become a partner in hope. Your gift to St. Jude could last a lifetime.
Welcome back. This is the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave. I'm John Gordon.
I'm Zeke Acosta with Acosta Heating, Cooling, and Electrical.
Give us a call. We're in our lightning round, 704-570-1110, 704-570-1110. We'll talk about what's important to you. Lots of great calls this morning. Appreciate it. Zeke, we were kind of going through, and I'm going to save the whole house. Well, we'll see if we get time for the whole house generator thoughts and comments. But just back to the heat pump thing, you said something I wanted to ask about, because we were talking about things that you would do that a homeowner would do that could reduce the actual efficiency of an efficient unit like a heat pump. And what we started talking about, just paying attention to the temperature, the actual readout on the temperature versus just getting to a comfort level and leaving it alone. And because ultimately you can say, well, I want to save a little bit of money, so you dial it down based on the temperature. And then like, well, now it's too cold in here, so you dial it up, and then the system kicks back in to try to catch back up. But you said set it on auto mode. And in my mind, I've been afraid to say auto mode is good, because I felt like if you put it on auto mode, as soon as it dropped below a certain temperature, it could indiscriminately just try to heat up faster or cool. Well, cool off faster is kind of irrelevant, but you think auto mode is actually the best thing? Is there are the system?
The thermostats are, you cannot set it too close together. So, like, if you got it set, you know, at 70 or 72 for heat, mm-hmm. you cannot set the cooling at any, you know, it's got to be a 4-degree difference between one and the other. So,
okay.
it's not like it's going to turn off from heat and go to cooling unless the house heats up another 3 or 4 degrees, because there's a 4-degree difference in between the heating and the cooling system.
Okay. That makes more sense. And so if you've maintained that difference, then it's not going to just toggle back and forth and reduce the efficiency.
Right.
Okay.
No, it does not. You will in the spring and the fall, you could be, you know, heating in the mornings and cooling in the afternoons, but that's just because, you know, the heat builds up and the air conditioner has to come back just to, and that helps because it gets the humidity out also. So it's
right.
It's a comfort level there that you go by. There's a 4-degree difference between heating and cooling.
All right. So it sounds kind of critical. And I think that it takes us to the other question is, or two comments that I threw out there. One is fiddling with the actual setting on the thermostat. It's like, okay, I'm going to dial it up. I'm going to dial it down. I think it goes to the first advice you gave, which is pick a level where you're comfortable and leave it alone.
Right. If you turn it, you want to save some money, and you turn the heat down to, you know, instead of 70 down to 68.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you come back and you raise it back to 70, there's at least a 2-degree difference there, and it's going to not only bring the heat on, or the heat pump on, but possibly bring on the electric backup heat as well, because there's between the first stage and the second stage can be just 1-degree difference. So, and that's kind of hard to set. And some of the older thermostats had a blue light or a red light that
right.
came
yep.
on when the electric heat was on.
I remember that.
Well, those are not there anymore. Now, some thermostats do show a little flame or an extra light or something on the thermostat, but just you have to look at the thermostat
yeah.
at the screen instead of just, you know, be able to walk by and see the light, so it'll give it up right away.
Yeah, so unless you're like doing what we told you not to do, which is walking over to it and fiddling with it all the time,
right.
You're not going to notice. So, all right, so the idea is set it and leave it.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Now, I think that's the fourth thing was trying to kick the heat up to heat things up really fast. I mean, there might be some times and scenarios where you have to do that, but as a general rule, I think is it 2 degrees? If you take a jump of 2 degrees or more, it's automatically going to kick the auxiliary in. Is that right?
Normally, yes. Normally, that's the thing, a two-degree difference.
So if you're going to do it, well, it sounds like just all of it fits together and find a comfort zone or a comfort range that is it's comfortable, and then let it run. I know that I have a thermostat where I can program, you know, 7 days a week, 24 hours of the day. And 20 years ago when I started messing with it, I was like all up in there, you know, this time of day do this and this time of day do that. I have really radically simplified my schedules, and I've discovered that my energy consumption is actually better. It wasn't trying to catch up and then go down and then catch up and then go down. And I've got regular air conditioning and natural gas heat. So I don't know, for what it's worth. All right. So that kind of gets at the things that we could do to make a efficient system inefficient. Let's talk whole house generators.
Right.
They're like way, I feel like they're way more popular than they used to be.
They are. They've really gotten quite a bit. I guess, I don't know, that just the more people are wanting that safety that,
yeah.
You know.
Peace of mind.
And, you know, you have a lot of people like myself that has, you know, has to have have sleep apnea and end up having to have a BiPAP or a CPAP machine.
Yeah.
And you can't sleep without it. And
yeah.
The power goes out, you need it. So that's one of the reasons why I put the, you know, backup generator in my house. People get older, they're more, you know, they don't want to be without heat or without air conditioning. The comfort, that safety net, it's very good to have. They've got them now. I mean, used to be like 10 kW, and they make them now air cool, because they have a air cool and then water cool, which
right.
For the bigger ones, but. They make an air cool like 26, I think it's even 28 kW air cool generator now, and
wow.
That with all the technology, it's the same thing. You don't have to go to the biggest generator to do a whole house. You can do a whole house with a 24 or 26 kW generator and have control modules that say, you know, I don't want my second floor air conditioner to come on right away. The first thing I want is my lights to go on, and then if it can handle that, let the stove come on or let the air conditioner come on. But I don't want the second floor unit coming on until the generator is running and is kept up with it. And they have it's load shedding. It just like the power company years ago had the load control that they send the signal and turn your air conditioners off. Well,
right.
the generators have basically the same thing. You can turn one air conditioner off, or turn your washer and dryer off, or turn your stove off. You can shed it, and you can go in there and program it to which one you want first. You can do a pretty good size house with a 26 kW generator.
That's really cool. But so it really means that so that's all integral with the system. One of the things I wanted to talk about was a transfer switch.
Right.
You know, just that happens with a portable unit. The same thing fundamentally is in place in this big system. It's just that it's all integral and programmable, it sounds like.
Right. It's very much so. And yes, you transfer switch is a safety also, because if you got your generator running and you don't have a transfer switch, power can go back into the electric grid, and electrical employee is working on the power lines up the street, they could get shocked from your generator.
Yeah.
But that transfer switch turns it where it just disconnects from the power grid altogether.
Right.
So it's only your house that's getting the power.
Yeah, so there's no such thing as like a one-way wire where electric can only flow in.
It's
there's a conductor.
No diodes for that big. It'd be a very good size diode.
Yeah.
The transfer switch is very important.
All right. So, look, we're probably less than a minute away from just wrapping up here, so I appreciate it. Zeke, just share real quick, folks, some contact information for y'all.
All right. Well, our main number is just 704-527-1889, and our website is just acostainc.com.
Awesome. Thanks for that. Zeke, really appreciate the help. Folks, we want to remind you, as we do every week, that we think the most important kind of home improvement you can make is the one that makes your home a happier place to live in. Don't forget to work on that project this week, and we'll see you next week on the Home Depot Home Improvement Show with John and Dave.